The first reading this morning comes from the essay, The Prophethood of All Believers by James Luther Adams, found in his book, Taking Time Seriously, 1957, although it was originally published in the major Unitarian magazine that preceded the UU World all the way back in 1947. I'll talk more about Dr. Adams during my sermon.
Excuse me. The liberal church is not a church in which the prophetic function is assigned merely to the few. The prophetic liberal church is the church in which all members share the common responsibility to attempt to foresee the consequences of human behavior, both individual and institutional. With the intention of making history, in place of merely being pushed around by it. Only through the prophethood of all can we together foresee doom and mend our common ways.
And the second reading comes from the book The Sacred Meal, 2009, by writer Nora Gallagher, in a series of books called The Ancient Practices Series.
At the heart of any religion worth its salt, I think, is what a friend calls redemptive wrestling. Faith is all about struggle, about getting to what is really real in the world that does not always welcome reality. A spiritual practice is a place where heart and mind are trained in such wrestling. The breaking bread, communion, is one such spiritual practice. Let me tell you a story. A group of men are in prison. They are one of the more than 10,000 political prisoners in this country's jails. They want to celebrate communion, but they have no bread. So one of them says, "We will act as though we do have." And so he begins to lead them in the service from the Book of Common Prayer that he has memorized over many years of attending the practice of communion at church. When he gets to the words of Jesus said during the prayer, he turns to the man standing next to him, holds out his empty hand, and says, "This is my body which is given to you." And so they go around the circle, one by one. Each man turns to the next, opens his palms, and says, "This is my body given for you."
Mark, Would you go to the San Francisco airport this afternoon and pick up Dr. Adams? It was Marie Bishop talking, the administrator of my seminary in California. I was one of the only students who actually had a car at the time. I was a first-year student, in fact, back in 1976. I said, "Dr. Adams, who's that?" She said, "Oh, I don't know, some professor from back east was out here to give a lecture tomorrow night." "Oh, okay, sure, I can do that," I said. She showed me a picture of him so I would recognize him at the airport, and then she gave me the time of arrival and the gate. I picked him up without a hitch, except for the very heavy traffic coming back across the Bay Bridge to Berkeley. But we did have a great conversation along the way about what he was going to be lecturing about and something of his spiritual journey. He asked me about mine, too. And then after we talked, he told me that I should meet his friend, Bernie Loomer, who lived in Berkeley, whom I eventually did meet about 2 years later. He asked me if he could find a place to rest and take a nap before he had a meeting where he was going to meet the person who was putting him up for the night. I said, "Well, sure, you can take a nap at my apartment, which is directly behind the bookstore in the school." So I brought him to my place, called Marie to tell her mission accomplished, and then offered him my bed, which, mercifully, I had actually made up that morning for a change, so he could take his nap. When he woke up, I offered him a bit of fresh baked bread I had purchased that morning from the fantastic bakery down the street, served with butter and jam, just to tide him over. And then I drove him to his meeting up in the Berkeley Hills. I only learned later that he was the most revered theologian in our Unitarian Universalist tradition in the 20th century. I only read his books and essays a year after I had met him. But he has been a great influence on both me and Eric and the rest of our colleagues throughout these years. And in a secondary way, on you. Linda Thompson, our veteran historian, informs me that he preached here in Columbus, too. Not in this building, of course, but in the house that formerly sheltered us closer to the campus back in the winter of 1942. He also attended our campus group at one time. And he was responsible for helping Jack Hayward, one of the most beloved ministers of this congregation back in the 1950s, to move from Congregationalism to Unitarianism. And it was Dr. Adams, in fact, who married Jack to his wife. Adams was interested in the social aspect of our religious tradition, how we live together in a freely covenanted community, how we impact society itself with our justice concerns. He wrote, as you heard in the quote from his essay, "The Prophethood of All Believers," that this is the work of the liberal church, to make history in place of merely being pushed around by it. I love that line. The liberal church, us, remember when the word liberal hadn't been smudged and distorted by the poison tongues of people like Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh? It wasn't that long ago. The liberal church stands in the line of the left wing of the Reformation. Now, Luther, one of James Luther Adams' namesakes, had talked frequently about the priesthood of all believers, a radical statement saying that no one needed a specially ordained priest through whom and only through whom one could communicate with the holy or the most deep or the most high. But the left-wing reformers went a lot further than Luther did, and Adams summarized their insight as the prophethood of all believers. Dr. Adams was making a literate reference to Luther's original and classic statement, and he knew very well that belief in any thousand-year-old religious concepts was not central or even necessary in any Unitarian Universalist congregation. So you don't have to wrestle with that word. Set it aside. It's simply an historical reference. Prophethood. All right, what does that mean? In the Hebrew and in the later Jewish tradition, the word Navi, translated usually as prophet, literally means one who speaks out or a spokesperson. A prophet is not a magical predictor of events like who's going to win the election, who's going to win a war, who's going to win the lottery. Prophets, Navim, are those who actually dare to open their eyes to see past the surface of modern life. They see past consumerism and fracking and oil usage all the way to the permanent damage being done to our home, the earth. And then they call us to turn around and come back and change our ways and attune our consciences so that won't happen. They see past the present rhetoric around race and ethnicity and immigration and marriage all the way through to a undeniably possible era of justice for all. Or if that is not going to be the case, a time of deep trouble for us all. They speak out in concern, they warn, they call us back to our senses. In Dr. Adams' words, only through the prophethood of all can we together foresee doom and then mend our common ways so the doom doesn't come. Prophets are those who announce the harsh consequences of our unconscious behavior, but also ask us then to mend our ways. And Dr. Adams invites every member of the liberal church to take up their prophethood, their task of clear vision past the surfaces and unequal comforts and the market hubbub of present-day society. You can say, we are called, each of us, to have a vision of a world made just, where bodies are housed and fed and tended, or you can use Dr. Adams' words, the prophethood of all. I don't care what language you use, but get the idea. I suppose our Justice Action Ministry in this congregation has been saying something like that to us for about a year. Each of us is called to this work. It's not simply the work of a committee someplace or a team. And there's a myriad job descriptions as to how to get it done. So please drop the image of going to the barricades and waving a banner. You don't need it. Justice work is rarely that dramatic. Sometimes it's as quiet as reflecting on Dr. Adams' oft-said aphorism from his teaching days, if it does not incarnate, that is, if it is not embodied, it dissipates. As Dr. Adams said, freedom is not ethereal, that is, it's not a ghost. It has to be embodied. Real food, like the kind that we give to Jacques and Jacques brings down to the poorest county in Ohio, is what I'm talking about. Real shelter over people's heads. Real health care for all aspects of the lives of men and women and children, people who are transgender or intersex, the broken, the poor, the blown up veterans of war. Absolutely everyone. Real bodies, including ourselves, who are not separate from the rest of the community of human bodies in the world. As Unitarian Universalist minister Marilyn Sewell put it so beautifully, the body has its own way of knowing, a knowing that has little to do with logic and much to do with truth, little to do with control and much to do with acceptance, little to do with division and much to do with union. We are the bodies she's writing about. That's why I love the reading from Nora Gallagher. She talks about the breaking of bread as a practice that has to do with meditating on the word body, that is, on embodiment, not in the way that remembers the sad, bloody death of an ancient Galilean peasant's body long ago. Ralph Waldo Emerson, when he was a Unitarian minister, understandably walked away from that kind of communion, and I do too, but in a way that talks rather about our own bodies, bodies living out the role of prophets, seeing right now the embodiment of a better world in the days to come, past the difficulties of the present age. The prisoners in the story that she tells had no real freedom, and they had no real bread. So following the practice that many of them found so nourishing in their own traditions, they enacted the practice without literal bread, without literal freedom for their bodies, to anticipate with hope the freedom they will one day know and the true nourishment they will one day receive. "This is my body," they said to each other with open hands. The body, as Marilyn Sewell says, has little to do with division and much to do with union. My body, which is for you to count on me as an ally, for you to count on me as a friend, for you to count on me as a co-worker, for you to count on me for support, for you to count on me to be a truth teller, for you to count on me to be a companion in this life. Companion, which literally means from the Latin cum pane, with bread. Together we dream of justice for all, but we know unless that dream is embodied, it will dissipate. It will not be real, just a mere fancy, just a ghost. Dr. Adams understood the social meaning behind the breaking of bread very well. It's actually one of the things we did talk about in my car as I was driving him to Berkeley from the San Francisco airport so many years ago. He claimed that he loved the practice, the ritual, very much. The breaking of bread as one of many practices which help us to practice up for our prophethood. One of many practices, like our covenant groups and other kinds of conversation groups in the congregation, book study groups, Sunday worship, door-to-door canvassing at election time, lectures like this afternoon, rallies, the guest at your table boxes, showing up in favor of Planned Parenthood support, showing up at a bread meeting, a board meeting, a council, sitting in meditation to get clear about life, writing poetry that moves self and others into awareness and then action. Practices. Practices. And what's that old saying? It's practice that makes perfect.